Welcome to Today on Broadway for Tuesday, August 9th, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am a Ragtime and Ellis loser.
I was going to say, James, you're here. That means you're not on Ellis Island, so I'm sorry. I know you're a little salty about it. You're crying in your Ragtime deficient tears. But there is hope, because Ragtime on Ellis, which is their Twitter handle, tweeted out that even if you didn't win, stay tuned for a full ticketed run in 2017. I guess this shouldn't be a surprise, because they were always billing this as a developmental concert. Now, I don't know if that means that the full ticketed run will be on Ellis Island. I think that would be pretty cool. Or if it's going to be done somewhere else, maybe on a ferry itself, since Sammy Knoll likes to do things on moving vehicles. But we'll see. That's exciting. I hope it goes really well, and we are going to peruse social media and see if we can get somebody who actually got to go to come on the show and talk about it. Now, in full disclosure, James, I don't want to talk about it. You were offered a ticket, but it was a little too late, right?
Yeah, I did get offered a ticket about 2:30 or so this afternoon, but I had already scheduled something else, so I couldn't unschedule myself to get there. So I'm sorry that I didn't, but I had two jokes here, and now can I use them both?
Sure, go for it.
So, like, why is my vanilla ice cream all salty?
Okay, not really a joke, I guess, but go ahead.
It was coming back to the whole crying and vanilla ice cream thing.
Sorry, I talked too long.
Okay, yeah. And the other thing was, it's not really quite a joke, but maybe something very interesting. Sammy Knoll's doing lots of site-specific type of things, and you were talking about the ferry and all the other stuff like that. I was wondering if somebody will do a site-specific Titanic on an iceberg.
I would imagine that not many people would be buying tickets to that, whether it's on an iceberg or a boat. I would think that would be something I would try to avoid.
Got to talk to the guys in marketing about that. All right. First up, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory sets its Broadway dates.
It did. Yesterday, we learned that the original Broadway production of the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory musical will begin performances at the Lentfontaine Theater on Tuesday, March 28th of 2017, ahead of a Sunday, April 23rd official opening. Led by two-time Tony winner Christian Borle as the reclusive Candyman Willy Wonka, the musical features music and lyrics by Mark Shaman and Scott Whitman, as well as a handful of songs by Leslie Bricus and Anthony Newley from the iconic 1971 film. The original West End production, which won two Oliviers, was directed by Oscar winner Sam Mendes, but the Broadway version will be helmed by three-time Tony winner Jack O'Brien and will feature choreography by Joshua Burgass. No further casting has officially been announced, but there are a few names that you may or may not have heard of before that are already listed on the show's Wikipedia page in case you are interested. I'm not going to throw those out there since they're not confirmed, but they're not hard to find. Also, James, while we're on the topic of Broadway announcements, yesterday the Manhattan Theater Club's Broadway transfer of the play Heisenberg announced the tickets are currently on sale for that production to American Express card members, which began yesterday, and will be available beginning next Monday, August 15th at 10 a.m. New York time for audience rewards members, before finally being open to the general public the following week, August 22nd at 10 a.m. If you don't remember the show's off-Broadway run, the show is a two-hander featuring Dennis Arnett and Mary Louise Parker about two people who meet at a crowded London train station. Georgie, who is Parker's character, sees a much older man, played by Arnett, and walks over and plants a kiss on his neck. Normal adult behavior. According to the press notes, that electric encounter thrusts these two strangers into a fascinating and life-changing game. The show is directed by Drama Desk Award winner Mark Brokaw and begins performances at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater on September 20th.
All right. So next up, Fox's Rocky Horror Picture Show event has its day at the TCA's. Well, you have to tell me what the TCA is.
Well, we talked about it a little last week, I think, when you were gone, when NBC and Hairspray Live was having its panel at the Television Critics Association's annual meetings in Los Angeles. Well, yesterday, as you said, it was Fox's turn. And one of the things that was discussed very heavily with its own panel was the highly anticipated Rocky Horror Picture Show remake. Some interesting things that we learned from the panel are that the official air date will be Thursday, October 20th from 8 to 10 p.m., and that it will include a show within a show where Rocky Horror diehards will be able to participate like they do at those legendary absolutely terrifying midnight screenings that I would never be caught anywhere near. Director Kenny Ortega says that the music of this remake will be true to the original, but it'll have a contemporary flair. And he guaranteed the critics there that all of the performers are doing their own singing. Also, a new song for the film won't be included in the broadcast, but it will be featured on a DVD set that will come out a month after the show airs. Finally, the great three-time Tony nominee Tim Curry was at the panel in a wheelchair, still recovering from a debilitating stroke that he had over a year ago. He had nothing but praise for the production. He does play the criminologist narrator in the production, and he especially heaped praise upon Laverne Cox, who plays Dr. Frankenfurter. In addition to Cox and Curry, the event will feature Victoria Justice and Ryan McCartan, Annalee Ashford, Reeve Carney, Christina Milian, Adam Lambert, Ben Vereen, and more. They also released a new one-minute teaser trailer, which we will link to in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com.
Wow. That's I'm really looking forward to that. I've had so much fun in the past at Rocky Horror, and Matt, I'm sure that those, when you run for Congress, those pictures are going to come out of you doing Sweet Transvestite.
No, I, you know why I don't like the show.
You don't like audience participation.
No, it frightens me. My skin crawls. The only times I've ever seen it, I was on an aisle and I just felt like I wanted to shrivel up and hide. Like, I have no problem being there. Just don't come near me. Don't try to involve me. I'm not good at that.
All right, let's talk about the money. Last week's grosses.
Yeah, this past week's grosses are another weird collection of stats, as only six shows saw grosses in the black, but only one of those shows' increases was under $20,000, so a lot of them that made increases were pretty sizable. Cats, unsurprisingly, led the way with a $327,656 increase in its first week of eight full performances. Previously, it had four, then six, then seven performances, and last week it took a hit because of all of the critics and opening night. But with this big increase and eight full performances, it did break the $1 million mark for the first time. Also of note, Les Miserables added over $61,600 to top $1 million for the first time in 19 weeks and only the second time for a full week in this calendar year. Unsurprisingly, The Lion King and Hamilton were both above $2 million in grosses, with Wicked less than $75,000 away, followed in the $1 million club by Aladdin, The Book of Mormon, School of Rock, and then Cats and Les Mis. Waitress and Phantom fell just below the seven-figure plateau, with Waitress only being a couple $1,000s away. While no one will be spilling any tears for them, The Lion King at $262,000 and The Book of Mormon at nearly $136,000 were the biggest losers week over week. Now, James, we've kind of beat around the bush about On Your Feet before, but things aren't looking good over at the Marquee. The show hit an all-time low with just $656,563 last week. They only filled a little over 56% of their seats, and their 42.3% gross potential was second worst only to Finding Neverland, which has already announced closing. Unlike Jersey Boys, whose numbers aren't great either, that one, Jersey Boys, recouped. I mean, like, there are people who are running for Congress who weren't born when Jersey Boys recouped. On Your Feet has not recouped. So it's a lot of money to be losing week over week. So I hope they can turn this around some way and turn the beat around, no pun intended, and hopefully keep it going. But it's not looking good at the Marquee.
I'm so sad about that because I really enjoyed it. And I went in there thinking, oh, my God, this is going to be a train wreck. And I came out a totally different view on this thing. I loved it. I really enjoyed it. I have not seen any great marketing around On Your Feet, and I can't understand why. Maybe it's because I'm not their target market, which probably, it, you know, maybe I'm just not seeing the great campaigns, but maybe a big back-to-school push. I mean, it's just around the corner for back-to-school. All right, let's get up with the showing casting announcements.
Yeah, James, you might remember that back in April, we talked about Olivier winner Leslie Margarita co-starring with Tom Hewitt in what was at the time going to be the West Coast premiere of Disney's The Hunchback of Notre Dame at the La Mirada Theater for the Performing Arts in September. She also discussed it in a short little interview on the Theater People podcast, and Patrick asked her if this was going to be the impetus with a revised script and a kind of a darker storytelling to be the impetus for a potential Broadway run. She tamped that down, but was very excited about it. Well, last week, people started to realize that her name had been taken off the theater's site's official cast list, to which she tweeted that she had to back out to do something in New York. Then over the weekend, it was announced that Margarita would instead be playing the Gypsy Esmeralda in the Sacramento Music Circus's production running August 23rd through the 27th. She will be joined by John McGinty, a deaf actor who has appeared on stage with Deaf West, the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis, Chicago's Steppenwolf Theater and Company, and more as Quasimodo. Tony nominee Mark Jacoby will play Dom Claude Frollo. That's really interesting that she left the production at La Mirada in September to do this much shorter run at Sacramento Music Circus. But yesterday, all the pieces fell into place when it was announced that on September 6th, Queen Leslie would return to the role of Mrs. Wormwood in the Broadway production of Matilda, a role that she originated on Broadway and has become an undoubted, unbelievable fan favorite across the Broadway Twittersphere. The show is currently scheduled to close on January 1st. There was no mention of a final performance date for Margarita, so perhaps she will play out the run of the show. I know there are many, many Queen Leslie fans that are very happy to have her back in the wig, in the glitter, and doing, I don't know, you can bleep this out, but she talks about doing the Cooter Slam in one of the numbers that she is now famous for, which is her doing the splits. So good for her to come back on Broadway, and I'm glad that she's still getting a chance to play Esmeralda in a different production.
Yeah, I think if she's going in September to play out through the end of the run is going to be sort of expected. I can't imagine they would spend time and money and effort to recast the role or move somebody else in. So, yeah, I think she'll probably do that. So the Fantastics welcomes Lorenzo Lamas.
James, really? were you a big Falcon Crest fan back in the day?
You know, I had Lorenzo Lamas hair.
That's not what I asked. I feel like every actor in the 90s had Lorenzo Lamas hair, right?
High 80s and 90s, yeah, you know. Yeah, Falcon Crest, I'd heard about it. I can't say I really remember much about it.
Okay. Well, Lorenzo Lamas was one of the stars of Falcon Crest, and he will be taking over the role of El Gallo in The Fantastics off-Broadway. Now, you thought Leslie Margarita wouldn't do a short run in Matilda, but Lamas is taking over El Gallo from October 24th through November 6th. October 24th through November 6th, that's like a week and a half. Apparently,
I think he could probably close the show in that amount of time.
That thing's never closing. And if it does, they'll open up 5 years later and pretend like it never closed. Apparently, Lamas previously played the role of El Gallo in a production at Fort Worth's Casa Manana Theater, directed by and co-starring the show's book writer and lyricist Tom Jones. Who knew? You know you didn't. Another thing that I didn't know, James, was that Lamas played Rydell High's resident jock Tom something or other in the movie version of Grease in 1979. Something else that I had no idea. I feel like I have been underestimating the immense theatrical talents of Lorenzo Lamas for my entire life. So, Mr. Lamas, I apologize.
So, Tom Jones actually lives in Fort Worth. And
I did know that.
No, you didn't.
Yes.
See how I did that? So what was I going to say? Oh, we had him on. We had Tom Jones, not Lorenzo Lamas. We had Tom Jones on This Week on Broadway a few years back. And after we did it, I actually had to take the show and burn it onto CD and mail it to his house in Fort Worth because he couldn't play it. And he really wanted to listen to it, and he sent back such a wonderful handwritten note to us.
That's so cool.
I love theater people.
Yeah.
The podcast and the real people.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you.
All right, next up, a pair of Broadway creatives lands deals with Fox.
Yeah, and going back to Fox's TCA panels that we talked about earlier with Rocky Horror, it was also announced that Broadway director Thomas Kail and Broadway producer Mark Platt had inked deals with the Fox network. Kail, who earned an Emmy nomination for his work on Grease Live with Fox, has set up a production company with the network called Old 320 Sycamore, which I'm assuming has to do with his childhood home or something like that. With the company, he will develop, supervise, and potentially direct television projects, both for broadcast and Fox's different cable networks. James, other than Ivo Van Hove, Tommy Kail is the busiest man in theater, so for a TV network to lock him up is huge. And I hope that means only great things for his career, because not only is he obviously tremendously talented, he also seems like a super good guy. And he's obviously had a lot of success on stage, and Grease Live shows that he can do things pretty well on screen, too. So that's awesome for him. And then also Mark Platt, the father of Broadway's recently departed Fiero Jonah and the 2017 Tony winner for Best Actor in a Musical, Ben, signed a first look deal with Fox. Under the deal, the studio will have the exclusive first look at any projects, live action or scripted, which Platt develops for television. I know, James, we've talked about him a little bit before, but if you are unfamiliar with him, Mark Platt is responsible for such things as the aforementioned Grease Live, the Academy Award-winning movie Bridge of Spies, a little musical called Wicked, along with the big screen films Legally Blonde, Into the Woods, and many, many more. So again, the more people with theatrical backgrounds that get deals on television, that can only mean good things for potential theater content on the small screen as well.
I totally agree with you, and that's such great news. I'm really excited about that. And I see what you did there with the 2017
Am I getting ahead of myself?
No, not at all. For other people, time is linear. Let's get into the recommendations.
I was always a big fan of Quantum Leap. I haven't listened to it yet because it was just kind of tweeted out just right before we started recording. But the hilarious Doug Loves Movies podcast has a very special Broadway-themed episode. If you are unfamiliar with Doug Loves Movies, it is hosted by comedian Doug Benson, who, James, we talked about Best Week Ever. I think Doug Benson used to appear on Best Week Ever, didn't he?
Yes.
Doug Benson is a noted, how do I say this, cannabis enthusiast. He is also a regular contestant on a show that I watch first thing every morning called At Midnight. And his recent episode of this podcast, which just came out yesterday, features the likes of Laura Benanti, Brad Oscar, Alex Brightman, and Julia Madison, all Broadway fantastic performers. This will be something that I listen to first thing in the morning as well, because as we know, I love Laura Benanti, but also Brad Oscar, Alex, and Julia are great. So I can only imagine what kind of goofiness those five people get into together.
A little bit of trivia. He changed the name of the episode to Doug Loves Musicals.
Oh, did he? I didn't see that.
Yes, he did. And also his birthday is on April 20th. All right, Matt, why don't you get us out of here?
I wonder how many people pick up on that. Okay, thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio, and you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt, and subscribe to Something Like It Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. It's a good podcast, but not much pop humor.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. I'm glad I was with you tonight and not on Ellis Island.
No, you're not.
All right. So, please come back and talk with us. Yes.
You've been smoking a little, James?
Oh, it's too.
Got the munchies.
Oh, Doritos. Broadway Radio, sponsored by Doritos. And Taco Bell, Yoquitos. All right. My name is James Marino from Broadway Radio with Broadway. And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thank you for spending your Tuesday with us, and we will come back and talk with you tomorrow.